bills before us today. HB 101, charter schools, there's an HB 203, which is an appropriation bill for the study of school cost factors, and HB 250, the operating budget missions and measures. Senator Donnelly will be chairing a portion of the meeting dealing with missions and measures and the cost factors. David, is an appropriations bill. Do you want to?
Well, sure, I'll do it for that, too.
So, Senator Donnelly will be chairing the meeting for the appropriation bill 203 and the operating budget missions and measures portion, which is HB 250. First up, we have Representative Dyson's HB 101 regarding charter schools, and we have the Kenai LIO signed up to testify, and we'll get to those in a few minutes, and I would just remind anyone that wants to testify that we have the sign-up sheets in the back. Representative Dyson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. This bill is very similar to the one you passed out of here last year, and the major difference is the financial part of it, and it does have a significant financial note and fiscal note, and I commend that to your attention. It has certainly been an active part of the House discussion about whether the fiscal note that attached to this bill is a part of the total number that's going to be given to education, public education this year, or in addition. And I suspect will be a part of the negotiations of the end game here as we wind down on the budget. When I was elected to the House 4.5 years ago, now Senator Davis, who was the author of the original charter school bill, said, I asked her what I should do when I got here, and she said, fix that thing. She said, I did as good as I could then, but the charter schools will not survive under existing law, and she was prophetic. And they are struggling. Our charter school law is amongst the weakest in the nation, and what we're doing here fixes some of that. It basically extends the contract periods for a charter school, and they are public schools, extends them from 5 to 10 years so that they make it easier for them to get leases and make leasehold improvements. It doubles the number from 30 to 60, removes the geographical limitation. Right now, for instance, here in Juneau, they only have one slot left, and apparently a couple of groups are interested in it doing it. It also adds a small provision that allows for a charter school to use public buildings that meet public safety requirements, but not necessarily the really stringent requirements for a school. And that's completely at the discretion of the local superintendent, advised by the building inspector. But indeed, that provision will allow a charter school to locate into, say, a public auditorium or a mall or a church building, and helps to solve the huge problem they have with finding space. It also makes it clear that charter school students have to pass whatever competency test that we end up with. And then it makes a one-time startup grant, $500, and certainly the startup costs of any school are very significant. And then it does one more thing, and that it takes the number. Right now, if your school has less than 200 students, the per student state support is the same as the largest school in the district. So certainly where I live, the charter schools that have 80 or 100 kids or 150 get the same amount as the largest high school, of 2,000 and more. And it makes a significant difference in the amount of money. Certainly bigger is better often in the scale factors for efficiency. It's my own conviction in many pedagogists that bigger is not necessarily better when it comes to education. And small schools can and have done very well. This just moves the floor down from 200 to 150, that threshold. And I'd be glad to answer any other questions. Charter schools are hundreds of them starting all over the nation. Some of them are very imaginative. We have some going now that are making a real emphasis on preserving native languages and cultures. We have one that wants to start that's going to rally around Japanese. There are some that are wanting to start that are going to be focusing on deaf children. I've read about in other places of the country where there are charter schools located in a mall. The kids are studying business and working for the merchants in the mall during part of their day and on-job training. one charter school down in America that's on an airport, and they have the classes in a hangar, and the kids come out and graduate with an A&P license. Just lots of very imaginative things that are going on, and certainly when you get parents leading the parade, and you have an awful lot of enthusiasm, and they do something that I'm not very capable of, and that's thinking outside the box. I have with me my chief of staff, Wes Keller, who far more equipped than I am to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative Dyson. Questions or comments from the committee? Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, thank you, Representative Dyson, for bringing this back before us. A couple of questions. One having to do with the grant, one-time startup grant. In my head, the grant that buys pencils and papers and gets you moved into your building and puts up the wallpaper and carpet and things. But we seem to be giving also that grant to 3 cyber schools. And we seem like we already give them 80% of the student dollar to do just those very things. So I'm wondering, is that just something that slipped by, or was that your intent? And why would we give $600 to cyber schools when they really don't have a facility to deal with as a charter school would?
For the record, my name is Wes Keller, through the chair, Senator Wilkins. The setting up of the charter school still costs a lot of money, the planning, the computers they use, and whatever, and this one-time grant, we figured it should go to all schools. It wasn't an oversight.
One other question.
Mayor Wilkins?
We had some discussion at Hess, and I don't know if you plan on having the department talk about this, but just so that it's on the record, if we go to page 3, line 13, and it talks about that we have safety standards applicable to public buildings or other public schools in the district. So, and we talked about this at the Hess committee, but I just want to make sure we're all aware that this may be a lower standard than the schools that we put our kids through, and that we all understand. I think the superintendent has the sign-off capability.
Yep.
And so that's a little bit disconcerting. That may be abused, although I think our superintendents have the same level of concern of safety of their kids as all of us do. But I just wanted to bring that up today to make sure that the committee was aware of that.
Thank you, Senator Wilkin. Senator Osterman?
Back to the grant program, $500 per pupil at home. Am I assuming that the $609,000 fiscal note, that all the current charter schools that are out there now would make that application, and then any new schools that come along? And if it's a one-time grant, why does the fiscal note continue on out in the future?
Actually, I think not all of them qualify.
But, Mr. Chairman, I would expect to see a bloom payment in the first year of all the current schools, and then are we talking about? I don't understand.
The fiscal note reflects that you do have a large amount the first year, and then it drops off. Representative Dyson, did you want to comment to Senator Osterman's question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator Osterman. That is only the department's guess at how many new ones will be starting. And I think it's optimistic. I hope there are that many. I don't think there will be.
New ones get over
150. I think I understand. It was just shown to me that there's 2 fiscal notes. The first one for 1.4 is your bloom payment of the first year, and then the ongoing program is $609,000 a year.
Yep.
And why is the balloon payment, and I mean, why is there 609 in the year 2002 and then 1.4 in 2002 for over $2 million in?
Yeah, and the ongoing 609 that's for the schools that get more money because we changed the threshold from 200 down to 150.
That's not the grant program.
Right.
The grant program is $170,000 a year then in ensuing years.
The $170,000 a year, his department is asked for a position and support in the DEED to look after and take care of all the charter schools and help them out.
At some point in time before we're done, I'd like to have the department up to talk about.
Yes, Mr. Jeans is here. Eddie, could you come up and address some of these questions, please? State your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Eddie Jeans. I'm the school finance manager for the Department of Education and Early Development. Mr. Chairman, I believe where the confusion's coming in is you have two fiscal notes in your packet. The $609,000 fiscal note is a reoccurring cost for dropping the threshold from 200 students to 150 for the school size adjustment. And that's why you'll see that cost out in fiscal year 2003-2004. The second fiscal note is the fiscal note for the position that the department is requesting under this piece of legislation, because this legislation institutionalizes the charter school program in the state. Right now it's a pilot program and is slated to sunset in 2005. The grant program you can see listed on that fiscal note, I'm referring to the one at $1.4 million. We have projected the fiscal note for the grant portion at $1.2 million in fiscal year 2002. In the out years, we have not projected anything because we have no idea how many new charter schools are going to be coming on board or the size.
Thank you. Recall just a momentary at ease. Eddie, could you come back just for a moment? I just wanted to discuss something regarding the formula. The 150 students, dropping that to 150 students for a separate school, what's the funding mechanism that goes up or down regarding charter schools, size of school?
Mr. Chairman, the section that this bill affects is Alaska Statute 1417905. Which is the school size adjustment.
Right.
And if you look at the bottom of that statute, I believe it's section B, says alternative programs serving less than 200 students will be counted in the largest school in the community or something to that effect. What this does is this allows for charter schools with serving up to 150 students to be counted as a separate school.
So they get the same amount per student as whatever their formula ADM is?
Mr. Chairman, what it allows is for this, in this particular case, it's one school in the Lower Kuskokwim School District serving 190 students. What it allows them to do is go through the funding school size adjustment table as an independent school. Right now, the charter school is counted with the Bethel High School.
Okay, I guess that's my question then. When they get to a certain size, they're just, for the purposes of the formula, they're just considered a school like any other school. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Oh, okay. That was my question. I couldn't remember in the formula whether we had a certain dollar amount that went to charter schools like we do for correspondence schools.
No, Mr. Chairman, it's a size factor, and that section of statute that you were looking at, 905, refers, you have basically three breakpoints. You have those schools, communities serving less than 100 students count as one school. Those communities serving students between 100 and 750 count as two schools. And then beyond that, over 750 students, each school in the district counts as an independent school unless it's an alternative school, which the department, through regulation, has classified charter schools as alternative schools.
Thank you. That clears a lot up for me. Thank you. Any other questions? Senator Lehman of Mr. Jeans or Representative Dyson? Eddie, could you just maybe stick around up there? I'm sure we'll have some more questions for you.
It was Representative Dyson. Fred, you used in your testimony the term startup grants, and yet several of these schools that will be getting this $500 per student are not really in the startup mode. They've been around for several years, some of them. What is the rationale behind just doing a blanket $500 per school grant and or the alternative of really giving a $500 grant for startup costs, as you alluded to in your testimony?
Yeah, for the new ones. Yeah, thank you. To the chair, Senator Lehman, that's an honest question, and we wrestled with it. All of them are on the ropes financially. There's only one of them that is really doing well, and they have a donated vacant school. You know, so the ones that are already started have been really struggling, and some of them are in debt. So we were wanting to help them out, and kind of the fairness issue too, of you know how come the ones that are getting started now get to all this new big grant and we didn't, and
yes, please,
and so on. And it was just a decision we made that the ones that started 3 years ago and 4 years ago still need help and need it badly. I have literally used my pickup to haul throwaway textbooks from one school in our district and tape them up in my garage to use in a charter school, and have been fixing up furniture. that was thrown away from other schools. That's how desperate these folks are. For just very things that are pretty basic.
What do I say to somebody who's running a charter school that's down below 150 who's saying, we're hurting and this bill doesn't reach far enough to really help us? If you do that, fiscal note gets even higher. And
yep.
I know you're probably trying to compromise and come up with something that is reasonable.
Yeah, and as you remember, I asked this bill be pulled on the floor for the Senate last year because, indeed, the extra financial help that I believe them schools needed desperately got amended out. And I very much want that this bill to get through this session. Some of these schools are not going to make it if it doesn't. And I believe the federal government, under new leadership, is going to do some things to help as well. So we've been trying to make the strategic decisions of how much can we do to help these charter schools and keep them alive and give them hope and not have such a fiscal note that it kills it, given our state's significant negative budget. And we just drew the line somewhere. If you go down to 100, the fiscal note blows up by another $2 or $3 million, as I remember. And it was absolutely arbitrary and a judgment decision, and I would encourage you to use your judgment. It might be superior to mine.
Any other questions regarding the fiscal note? Representative Dyson, one of the things that I'm a little concerned about, the charter schools, when we created them, I was under the impression that one of the reasons was that they were going to act as incubators for new methods of educating students, that then the larger school districts could incorporate some of these techniques, and of course the larger school districts would benefit just from the very existence of the charter schools. It seems to me that what's happening is that the argument has changed when talking about charter schools, that they're putting out better students. That is why we should fund them and do whatever to keep them going. But the problem is, I think that anytime you take a school and reduce the number of students in that school or an environment where you have fewer students, and then you require, as many of these charter schools do, a high level of parental participation, then it's really no surprise that you're getting better students, that you're having a better product coming out of those schools than maybe out of the public schools at large. But the public schools can't necessarily mandate parental participation, nor can they drop the number of students per classroom or even to the school. So are we really learning very much? Are the charter schools providing us with a greater benefit? Senator Green?
These are public schools.
I guess regular public schools, you get there. My point is that...
I mean, it's important, though, that this be... Well, we remember these are public schools.
That's true. Alternative schools rather than the larger public schools.
Yeah. Thank you, Ms. Chairman. Good question, and I think that the passage of this bill is going to give them enough financial breathing room that they will be able to do more imaginative things and get out of the pretty basic survival mode. One of the things that has been a surprise to me in working with this community, at least in Alaska, our private schools and our charter schools are not creaming. They are not sweeping the cream off the top of the student populations in the public schools. And in fact, quite the contrary. The two charter schools that I'm most familiar with in my town, or near it, have 25 or 30% of the population. One of them is 40%, were thrown out of the regular public schools for behavior problems. And the parents went and petitioned the charter school to take them, and hoping that smaller class size and more intensive stuff, that those kids would survive, the ones with behavior problems. Also, there's in one of the private schools that Senator Lieben and I are most familiar with, they've got 40% of the kids were thrown out of the public schools. Another 25% of them are recently adopted kids from Romania and the Russian Far East, and another 20% are foster kids, all of them with significant problems. And I think, at least in Alaska, it's kind of an urban myth that our alternative education schools are sweeping the cream off the crop. I think we're seeing some amazing and very interesting experiments going on. Certainly our cyber schools are. Dr. Hamilton, University of Alaska, tells me that they, and we've been working together, but they're probably going to start 3 charter schools in the near future. And they're going to use them for lab schools for training teachers, you know, and just fascinating all the sorts of things that are going on.
Thank you, Representative Dyson. Any other questions or comments? I think we'll probably bring this bill up again if there aren't more. Senator Osterman, there are any questions?
Just a comment, President, and all due respect to Representative Dyson. Him and I have had several discussions about charter schools and whether they weaken the public school system because of the dollar stuff that comes off. And this, I guess, is reinforcing some of my concerns originally that that if we've got a problem in our public school system, we need to go fix it. Not create other avenues of drawing money or drawing the population out of our public school system. And that has been my problem with charter schools all along. I look at some of these schools, and I've looked at the religious schools as well. St. Mary's School in Quetiac, and there's another one that just got started there. And they're building their own facility, and they're doing their own things, but they're not taking the dollar value out of our public school system, other than the amount of students that move back and forth. I still have the same problem in my mind that we're continuing to weaken our public school system by this program, and then obviously when we have the discussions about vouchers, I also have the same concerns of what it'll do to the public school system. I think we ought to be spending more time concentrating on if the public school system is broke, let's go in and fix it rather than creating alternatives that take away from that ability to go in and fix it. So I'm not going to object or vote against moving this out of committee when it comes up, but I do have those reservations, and I don't know what I'll do with the vote on the floor.
Senator Green?
Mr. Chairman, we had a really good example in the MATSU of a school building out at Big Lake that was terribly overcrowded. And on a visit I made out there trying to work through some of their problems, they had essentially 2 or 3 classrooms that were sort of like a school within a school, very overcrowded. And they happened to have an empty church building not too far from the school. And there was also underlying interest in some people who wanted an alternative, sort of a family setting where they could have multiple ages in the classrooms together. And I was talking to the principal, and I said, well, you have the perfect formula here to go over and talk to the folks that own the church building and ask if you could convert that building and let that be the kindergarten classrooms, period, and just have all your kindergarten classes in that and free up the rest of the building. And I said, and the other, I said, you look like you have 2 or 3 teachers here who are absolutely prime for a charter school. And I said, you could be the beginning of a charter school. And that was a midnight family learning center. And it was a design that it could be multiple age who could go back and forth within the classroom together. And they did go through those things. And I say this only that it prevented the construction of, and or delayed, the construction of a school in that area, which would have been $10 to $15 million construction up front. And diverted, probably 90 kindergartners, maybe 120, plus the students that came from the elementary school fed into the charter school. Both are thriving and doing very well and have become widely accepted practices. And again, I want to make the point that it's very easy to talk about charter schools versus public schools. Charter schools are public schools. There's no difference. It's the same population. And because of the law that was passed, we stripped some of, or we avoided or could not get past some of those things that would have allowed for far greater creativity and the mechanism to be the money producers at charter schools have been in other places. I mean, some of the schools that were taken over in mid-city LA became the focus of the whole community and the industry and literally became support for their own school plus others. We have not allowed that and made that provision nor created the incentive to do that. But it bothers me that we, and it's okay, I guess, you know, if that wants to be, but that's one of the things that was very frustrating for me in the MATSU in the beginning, in that there was the, oh, we're draining off this from the public schools and we're getting it from our school administrators. However, in the years since then, we've seen a total turnaround, and MATSU actively supports the charter schools that are there and have done very well and have tried to work with the schools to give them the ability to continue, because it is a very, very, they have a great advocacy group, and those parents are there, they're working, they're supporting, they're doing extra. And since public schools cannot charge a fee like a private school can, if we're going to keep these schools as public schools and require them to have all the other requirements, vis-a-vis labor, buildings, et cetera, then we have to continue and not separate them out, but view them as a very friendly adjunct to education, not as an impediment. So I would hope we could.
Thank you.
Keep that in mind. Thank you.
Senator Green. Senator Olson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I certainly want to speak in favor of the bill. As the good senator from Kodiak said, certainly there are difficulties in the public school where people that can't afford to put their children into private schools have an alternative. The difficulty with some of the public schools that I've seen is that there are mandates put forth by the courts that do not allow us to go ahead and fix certain things that we find that some parents find offensive to their education of their students. But more importantly, I think with this particular bill right here, I would encourage action sooner than later, partly because there are, as was pointed out by the sponsor of the bill, there are schools that are on the ropes, and if something isn't done in fairly short manner to bolster them or to give them any kind of aid, we are in danger of losing them. And so that's the reason I speak in favor of this, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Larry Simmons in Kenai, or excuse me, Soldotna. You're at the Kenai LIO. Do you have testimony?
Yes, thank you.
Could you speak a little closer to the mic, please?
Yes, thank you. My name is Larry Simmons. I am the chairman of the Academic Policy Committee of the Aurora Borealis Charter School here in Kenai. Our school has is just now completing its fourth year. We have a successful program, and I see that measured by our enrollment growth, which has been about 20 students a year. We have a waiting list of over 200 students. We don't have room for those 200 students. We can only bring in 20 students a year. Also, our test scores, we test every grade every year. Our test scores are at are at the highest in this local district. We average in the 80 to 90 plus percentile on California Achievement Test, that's the CAP test, nationally. Those scores are well above average for this district and, frankly, for the whole state. And I hope that your goals are like our goals, and that is to educate students, not save money. Education costs money, and it grieves me, frankly, that that we're being too tight-fisted with the funds for education. And quite frankly, I'm a conservative person, and I work as a finance director for the city of Kenai, so I know what money's all about. But what we need to do in the state of Alaska is educate students. And at Aurora Borealis Charter School, we are doing that. And the district can certainly adopt our programs. They're back-to-basic programs, and they work. This district can do it if they want to, but it's going to be their choice. I would like to speak totally in favor of everything that's in House Bill 101, but I would like to try to elicit some support to the idea of treating charter schools as separate schools. That's what they are. They're separate schools. And we are penalized in funding, and so is our district penalized in funding by this alternative school limit idea. I understand that that to treat charter schools as separate schools is going to cost more money, but I don't understand the rationale behind not treating them as separate schools. Our business agent here at the Kenai School District did some calculations for me and pointed out that there is a $7,000 per student difference between a charter school student in Homer and a regular school student in Cooper Landing. Now, that's just not right. Our district is penalized heavily because of this. Those students hopefully would be in some other school that would be funded more than they're funded here at Aurora Borealis Charter School. Or perhaps they would be in a homeschool program that the state doesn't have to fund at all. And like I say, I hope what we're about is educating students. We at Aurora Borealis certainly are. And we need to have the sunset clause removed. We need to have that 10-year contract provision put in there. It's been a tough time prior to moving into the Kenai Elementary School to keep over our heads. And I'm sure that other districts are, or other charter schools are really having problems in that area. We totally agree with the competency requirements. At Aurora Borealis, accountability is one of our big issues, and we are going to be accountable to educate those students, and we're glad to see this provision in this bill. I guess I'll let that be all. Obviously, we at Aurora Borealis are very much in support of House Bill 101, and we thank Representative Dyson for his persistence in trying to get this done, and we hope that you on the Finance Committee will be able to support it.
Thank you, Mr. Simmons. Mr. Palm in Kenai as well.
Yes, my name is Gene Palm. I'm a fifth and sixth grade teacher at the Aurora Borealis Charter School in Kenai. Just some general comment. I do favor charter schools. However, I think the focus should be on success and accountability. Frankly, innovation may be good and creativity may be good, but my general feeling is that if startup schools and charter schools can't demonstrate some success, I don't frankly feel they should just be, they should be allowed to stay open unless there's a demand for their programs and they can demonstrate success. However, that success is predicated to a large degree on resources and financing. And I know in our situation, it has been really tight and it's really awkward. And it's just like a startup business. If the resources aren't there, you are in just a survival mode, and it's really hard to develop your programs and implement the programs to the point where you can get some success. Specifically, there's some elements in this bill that I'd like to comment on, and that has to do with the startup grants, as it was termed, or some of these other things. One of the things that happens in education a lot is that I think a lot of times the best money goes after the worst program. I really feel almost like a business that there should be some accommodation and made for grants or funding to feed those programs that are meeting some success and to allow them to disseminate that information and to develop their materials. In our case, we're a much more of a mature school right now. As Mr. Simmons said, we're meeting a high level of success. However, we want to, you know, further develop our program, our curriculum, and even disseminate it. Right now, that's all done on teacher off time. It has to be done on evenings, it has to be done on weekends, it has to be done on summers, and there's an inequity to it, and I believe that extra funds could go a long way to providing the extra staff that would allow us to develop those materials, and also we know where the limitations of our program are. We have needs that we can focus on for which we could use extra staff. Like a business that's matured, ready to grow, we're ready to go, but the funding is an issue. And so I guess specifically I'm definitely in favor of the section that allows for the $500 grant. And actually I think in general you should focus on those programs that are meeting success and allow money to go where that success is going and provide incentives to schools to adopt proven models. I guess that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Palm. At this time, I'm going to set HB 101 aside, and we're going to switch chairs here, and Senator Donnelly is going to hear the next bill from Representative Wilson. It is an appropriations bill. So,
thank you. Excuse me, Representative.
Yeah, thank you. I misspoke earlier. Actually, Bert Sharp led the charge on charter schools, and I believe then Representative Davis carried it in the House. And Bert does deserve the credit for the work that was done. Thank you.
Representative Dyson. Representative Wilson. Thank you. House Bill 203, appropriation for the study of school cost factors.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 203 is a bill that is just doing a study of school district cost factors. And the formula currently employed, well, well-intentioned, has unintentional consequences. A design error which tracked expenses as opposed to the actual cost of providing an education in each school districts has resulted in flawed district cost factors. So failure to precisely measure differential costs across the state has resulted in inadequate funding. And basically this bill is just to provide a study so that we can look at what the, what it actually costs in each district and each part of that district to run a school and to operate a school and to educate children.
Any questions for the representative? Senator Osterman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the past, I think we've done this type of study before, but it was based around what was actually being spent on schools rather than what the actual costs are. Is the way this thing's written allow the actual cost factors to be brought into?
Yes, if you look in the first section on page one, starting on line 10, it says the study should be based on the cost of providing education in each school district, including the cost of classroom instruction and administrative support, the cost of a school lunch program. These are just the various things that can be included. Cost of school materials and supplies and other costs that relate to directly or indirectly the operating of a school. And that is going to include various costs and various committees. It's going to identify major items of cost. For instance, who will be flown from one school. In some schools, the special ed teacher can just drive across town and get to another school. In some school districts, that might mean getting on a plane and flying to another part, to another school. So it gives the latitude in there where it says other costs that relate directly or indirectly to the operation of the school. And also, it's going to be included in that it will be in a format. Senate Bill 36 mandated that the Department of Education come up and kind of update that every other year. And so I'm envisioning like an Excel spreadsheet or something so that different factors can be plugged in and looked at so that we don't have to go through this whole thing and study the whole thing each time.
Okay. I believe Mr. Jeans has signed up to testify. Do you want to come up here?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Eddie Jeans. I'm the school finance manager for the Department of Education. Mr. Chairman, I'm here on behalf of the department in support of this piece of legislation. As Representative Wilson pointed out, the department is required to make recommended changes to or adjustments to the cost differentials every other year. That was a requirement that was passed in Senate Bill 36. The department fulfilled its requirement this year and attempted to use the McDowell methodology that was used in establishing the current cost differentials. And what we found was that methodology was flawed and did not work in terms of updating the existing cost differentials. So the department has requested through the legislature that there be funding for a study so that we can get a methodology that the department can use on an ongoing basis. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
There was Senator Osterman.
I don't know who should answer this, but I noticed that the bill coming out of House Finance has been changed with the CS and HES and the Senate side. It appears to have eliminated the consideration for cost of living, including food, housing, and stuff like that. Why was that not taken
out? I think probably Senator Wilkins can answer that. It was his committee substitute.
Senator Wilkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What we're trying to do is measure the cost of education, and that's can be compared to the cost of living, and the two aren't the same. So we want to focus in on education and not the cost of living. For instance, the cost of a house in a city may have nothing to do with the cost of education in that city. It certainly has a big part to play in the cost of living. So we try to focus it down with lines 10 through 13 to focus on education and then give some examples of what that they may look at. They're going to look at all sorts of different things to come up with a valid measurement of the cost of education.
Senator Osterman.
So in stepping in the mind, the cost to keep a teacher in a remote area is not relevant to what it costs to education. I mean, it seems to me that the cost of what it's going to take to have a teacher in a rural area versus someplace else has a direct impact upon that school budget and sometimes the operation.
Senator Wilken and Senator Kelly.
Also that the McDowell study confirmed what most people already knew, and that was across the state, the vast majority of every school budget was taken up in wages and salaries, salaries and benefits. To the extent, I don't remember the right number, but it was somewhere like 75% of every school budget. And that only varied plus or minus 1% across the state. So if you look at a pie, 75% of that pie is just one component. But what this study is going to do is going to be able to, if we call that flat across the state, that this study is going to look at the components in addition to that, insurance, transportation, all those other things that are more variable across the state. You won't see a school budget where it's 50% salaries in one district and 80% in another district. It was plus or minus 1% across the state with the McDowell study.
Thanks, Senator Kelly.
I guess a shorter explanation for my own sake, would it be that a cost of a teacher's salary is going to be in the cost of education? So I guess that takes into consideration that. I mean, if the school district has to pay a teacher more because housing prices are higher, then that's going to be rolled into the cost of education or food or whatever. I mean, indirectly, all of those are going to be brought in by the 75% component that is your teacher's salary and your administrative salary.
Mayor Austin.
This is the McDowell Group study that you're talking about, the same one that actually went out and did the original study that, where they took what they were spending rather than what the cost factor was.
Yes, could I maybe just
say, well,
maybe a little history would help. This is really important, but it's really difficult, and it's never been done before in our state. There's only been two studies, one in 1982, where the Department of Labor or somebody went out and studied 19 of the 40 election districts. And that study was a cost of living study, and that lay dormant. And then in 87, this over a continuum of problems they had in the mid-80s, they needed some way to come up with the formula that we replaced 3 years ago. They needed some way to come up with area cost differentials. They went back in 87 to that 82 study, which was only a partial study, politically, to make the ACDs happy with whoever happened to be at the table at that time. So if you look at 82, then it was adjusted in 87, that what amounts to a partial study. And then that supplied, that was the ACDs until we looked at Senate Bill 36. And we asked them to go out and see what was being spent. That was the McDowell study that we did. They went out, and I think Mr. Jeans can confirm this, but I'll just say they, in a way, threw their hands up in many places and said, wait a minute, we can't tell what they should be spending. We can hardly tell what they are spending because of charts and accounts. We didn't have a uniform charts and accounts across the state, which was disconcerting to many. So 82, 87 adjusted, and then the McDowell study in 98 or 97. And that's it. I mean, that is all the studies have been done in regard to the cost of education in Alaska. So this is a whole new field that we're going to do, and it's going to be very difficult. And that's why we need to take the time to do it right and take the time to test it so that it is a rolling model. That 10 years from now, I've heard more about ACDs in my 5 years here than anything else. And so 10 years from now, we ought to have a rolling model that people have trust in. That we can generate the ACDs across the state, and it'll take some refinement, but this is the start of that process.
Okay. Representative Wilson, we're going to hold this bill over and continue to work with you on it. And so thank you very much. Appreciate you bringing this for us.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to make one more comment on this. There are only 5 states in the lower 48 that use some kind of, try to get a handle on what it costs to run a school by using some kind of a cost differential study within districts. And so, and every one of them are different. It's not an easy process, and so this is something that is very difficult. I do want to make the comment, however, that the cost of living in some districts is important for the simple reason that some districts have to provide housing because in some districts there's no electricity, no running water, and what teacher in their right mind would go to a school like that without at least some kind of housing provided for them, and they know, you know, what they're going to look at. So even though that the majority or the percentage doesn't vary, it might be because of the way we fund the schools.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. We'll go on to House Bill 250. Danny, do you want operating budget mission and measures? Maybe you could give us the executive overview. We're late for another meeting already, and give us an idea of what we should be looking for in this, and so the members could take some time and review it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Denny DeWitt. I'm staff of the House Finance Committee. Before you have House Bill 250. It is our mission and measure bill for the FY 2002 budget. This has been a compilation put together by the subcommittees of the Finance Committee of both houses. We started with last year's missions and measures, and on the House side, we worked through those adjustments that we felt were necessary for this year. We compiled then a draft bill, which we shared with the Senate Finance Committee, and as I understand, was distributed to each of your budget subcommittees. Our staff and chairs worked with your staff and chairs reviewing it. There were suggestions made, particularly, I believe, in the DNR budget. There were a number of significant changes by your budget subcommittee, which were adopted into this draft. So it's a working document that we believe we worked together with both sides' budget subcommittees to come to an accommodation and put forward. I have in it for you an index that lists the sections and pages of each department so that you can reference that as you will. The only significant amendment to the bill that was not in the initial drafts that we shared was, if you look at page 2, lines 15 and 16, the average time taken to respond to complaints and questions that have been elevated to the commissioner's office. We added that in our final draft that we heard before the House Finance Committee. This was an attempt to find out how the departments are handling consumer complaints and concerns. We've had some discussion with a number of the agencies. When they first saw it, I think there was a lot of concern because it was simply different and something they didn't think they did. That is a measure that we used last year with the Department of Revenue. The Department of Revenue found that it was fairly simple to respond to it. Most agencies have logs where they log in the information and they can respond to that. It's just, I think, was unsettling to them initially, but they appear to have decided that they'll try and work through this and see what we do with customer complaints. The general issue of missions and measures, it sets out what we believe the mission of the departments are and the measures that we intend to use through the budget process as we watch the departments perform this year and as we review their performance next year in our budget hearings for the 2003 budget. That's a quick summary, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to respond to any questions that you might have.
Any questions? Senator Walker.
Thank you, Chairman. Danny, when Chuck Parnell first brought this idea to us maybe 4 years ago, he held up a book from Texas, and it was a bound book of missions and measures. So this is where we're going to head one of these days. Is there some thought of putting it in a book that sits on a shelf people can refer to?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkin, what we did last year is in our book on appropriations, we put both the operating budget bill and the missions and measure bill together so that, in fact, you can look at them. They're stapled as opposed to bound, but then we are a thrifty state. One of the things, if I might, Mr. Chairman, we did reorganize, and you may note this, it's one that I forgot to tell you, we did reorganize the order of each department in this bill to mirror the order in the operating budget bill. When we tried to put them together last year, because one was based on the directory of state agencies and the other was based on what was the budget, comparing them and putting them together got to be an enormous hassle. So we've reorganized it this year. I think it'll be easier to do that.
Denny, you all have been working on this for almost 4 months now. Do you feel like there's anything essential in here we have to do this year, or is there would it be reasonable for this committee to work on Senate factors over the interim on this?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's important that we move this in this budget year, as this is the mission and the measures upon which we're going to base our judgment of the FY02 budget. So, this is a work in progress, and we'll be back again next year with changes that we found are necessary. It's a growing working document, one that doesn't end at this act. But I think we would need it to measure performance on the FY02 budget.
Okay. All right, with that, I'm going to hold the bill over. Thank you for your presentation. And we've got some other meetings we need to get to, so we'll go ahead and adjourn for this. Was there anything scheduled for today? Okay, we will not be coming back tonight, so we'll be adjourning at this time. Thank you.